So the daf for today is daf nun tes. Let's just introduce this with the last three words on nun ches amid beis el amar rava. And what Rava is trying to explain is a brisa that said that if you have a zug, which is Hebrew for the word bell, and it's tameh, even if you remove the clapper, as we called it, and it can no longer produce music, it still remains tameh. And Rav explains this on the top of Nun Tes Amud Aleph. Hoil v'roi lahakisho al gabi cheres. That you could still produce musical sounds using this bell, even in the absence of the clapper, by striking it against an earthenware pot. Now, if I had a whiteboard, what I would write on it was Me'ein Malachto Harishona, which means that according to Rava, even though the original purpose of a particular utensil was for X, and it no longer serves for X, it doesn't lose its status as a kli. As far as Tumah is concerned, it still is susceptible to Tumah as long as you can use it for some function that is somewhat similar to the original function. And what that means is that in the case of the bell, I can use it as a utensil to create music. Not the original music, which a bell is famous for, but a different kind of music. Itmar Nami Omer Rab Yossi Rab Chanina. We found this also in the name of Rab Yossi. Hoil v'roi lahakisho al gabi cheres. That even in the absence of the clapper, the bell retains its status as far as tumah is concerned. And the reason for that is because you can use it to produce music, to produce sounds, by knocking it on an earthenware utensil. So basically, we're going to summarize what we've done up until now in terms of tumah and a bell, the status of a bell, and then we're going to start with Rabbi Yochanan. Number one, if a bell is worn by an animal, in the absence of a clapper, it does not have the status of a kli, it is not susceptible to tumah. Why? Because an animal, when it wears something, that doesn't give it the status of a kli, a beged, an ornament, a tachshit, unless it can produce music. So that's the second principle. If you have a bell that's worn by an animal, but it has this clapper and it can produce music, that makes it into a kli. Again, not because of its attachment to the body of the animal, but simply because man uses this. He gets benefit from it. That makes it into a kli. He hears the beautiful sounds of the bell. And you remember that we derived this from an extra word davar yesterday. Now, number three. A slave used to wear a bell, and that bell is susceptible to tumah, even in the absence of a clapper, because the status of a bell attached to a human being, in this case an eved, is that of a tachshit. It beautifies his garments, etc. And even if it doesn't produce music, since it's worn by a human being, that itself generates the status of a kli. The fourth principle is that sometimes they used to add little bells to a child, let's say to his bib or his garment, and the purpose of that bell was so that you would hear the child, you would know where the child is located, and so forth and so on. Such a bell would be makabel tumah if it has a clapper, because that's what its purpose is. Its purpose is to create music. And if, on the other hand, it doesn't have a clapper, then you haven't finished creating the kli, and that's called lo nigmara malachto. In other words, when you manufacture something for a certain purpose and it's not yet finished, you haven't completed the manufacture process, and it's not at this point roi, it's not suitable for that purpose, so he hasn't yet put in a clapper, it's not makabel tuma. Not like the case of a bell that's attached as an ornament in the case of a slave, which was created for that purpose, and even in the absence of a clapper, it's makabel tuma. However, suppose you created a bell, it was manufactured totally, completely, it had a clapper to it, and then that clapper was removed. What we just learned in Rava and Rabbi Yossi is that it still retains its status for Kabbalah's Tumah because it still can produce sounds. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Hol v'roi l'gamea bo mayim l'tinok. We could use a small bell as a cup, and we can fill it up with water and give it to a baby to drink. Rabbi Yochanan now is at a crossroads. He's breaking new ground in the laws of Kabbalah's Tumah, recognizing that even if the original function is gone, it can be used for a totally different function. It was originally created for to produce the sounds that a bell produces. Now I'm using it as a cup to drink from. It's not me'ein malachta rishona. And herein lies the machlokas between Rava that we started with today and Rabbi Yochanan that we're learning now. Rava, in order to maintain the status of a kli, requires that if the original function of the kli is gone, I need to substitute another function, but it's similar to the original function. So you had something like a bell that produced music, it could still produce music when I strike it against the pot. In the case of Rabbi Yochanan, he's much more machmir, he's much more all-inclusive when it comes to Tumah. Since it had a kli, it had a shame kli, it was susceptible to Tumah, as long as I can find some function which is not even remotely related to its original function for which it was manufactured, it still retains the status of a kli, and it's makabel Tumah. And now the Gemara is going to quote other sources that seem to indicate that Rabbi Yochanan's new position is untenable. Rabbi Yochanan lo boy mi'ein malachta rishona. Is it possible that any sort of function that I could come up with is enough to retain the same kli and the susceptibility to Kabbalah's Tumah? Tanya, we have a brisa. The brisa is now interpreting a pasuk in the parsha of Tumah v'Tara. This is the parsha of Zav. And a zav is metami b'medris. Medris means when he sleeps on something, or he rests on something, he leans on something. And there in the parsha it says, v'chol hakli asher yeshev olav. Any utensil which the zav sits on, yochol, I might think, kafa sa'a, he has a barrel that is used to contain wine or whatever substance, and it contain a saw, that's a certain volume of liquid or solid, it matters not, and he turns it upside down. That's called kafa, like we have kafa lehem harkigigas. You know, you turn something upside down, v'yashav aleha, and he sits on it. He makes a chair out of it. Its original function was as a barrel to contain its contents. Now he's making it into a seat, a chair. Or, another example, kafa tirkav v'yoshev aleha. Tirkav is half of a saw. And this is the size of the barrel. Turns it upside down. Sits on it. Yochel, I might think, etameh, that now this barrel is still subject or susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. It's no longer now designated for its original function, but yet it's a chair. A chair is also kli. No, Talmud Lomar, Asher Yeshev Olav Hazav. There's an extra word in the Pasuk that teaches me, Misha Miyuchad Liyeshiva. A utensil that was designated for sitting purposes. Yotzazet, to the exclusion of a barrel that was used as a retainer, as a receptacle. And now the Bryce ends up with a phrase. It's kind of an idiomatic phrase, but it became a halachic principle. Sha'omrim lo amod v'nasim alachtenu. It's as if the barrel would cry out, stand me up, in other words, turn me back right side up, and let me do the work that I was meant to do, namely to serve as a receptacle. And basically, this is not called Asher Yeshev Olav. So there's no Tumas Medrash when you re-designate a utensil for something that's not made Malachta Rishona. There's no connection, no resemblance between the original purpose of this barrel, namely as a retainer, and its purpose as a chair. So this Braisa contradicts Rabbi Yochanan, who maintained that we don't need Me'ein Malachto HaRishona. We take a bell that was meant to produce music. Now we use it as a cup to drink from, and it's called Kabbalah Tuma. It's for Kabbalah Tuma. What's Rabbi Yochanan going to do with this Braisa? So the Gemara now wants to suggest that we have a machlokas between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan as to the extent to which we apply the principle Omdim lo amod v'nasim alachteinu, that the kli has to still be designated for its original function. Rabbi Lazar Omer b'midrashos with regard to Medrash Tuma of a Zav Omrim, we apply the principle for Amod v'nasim alachteinu. As we saw in the Braisa, the Kli yells out, you know, what was my original function? So don't just sit on anything, you know, that doesn't make it a moshav for a Midrash Zah. V'af, v'ein omrim, v'tomei mes, amod v'nasim alachteinu. However, here's a chumrah with regard to Tumas Mes. We don't apply the principle of omrim lo amod v'nasim alachteinu. So you have something that was makabel tumas mes, it came in contact with a dead body, or it was in the same oil as a dead body, and it doesn't have its original function anymore. But it can be functional in some other capacity. According to Rabbi Lazar, if it contracted tumas mes, it retains its tumas mes status as long as it has some sort of function. It could be used in some way as a utensil. And we're not going to say, well, amod v'nasim alachteinu. Well, it's not suitable for its original function. Rabbi Yochanan says, af, even in the case of tamei mes, omrim b'tamei mes amod v'nasim alachteinu. So it means that Rabbi Yochanan rejects Rabbi Lazar, and he holds that even with regard to the chumrah of tumas mes, once the primary function, the original function of the utensil is gone, and it's no longer suitable for that, then the tumas mes is no longer applicable. And even if you can use the vessel for something else, it's not susceptible to tuma. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan here, with regard to this discussion about the barrel that he turned upside down to sit on it, and it's no longer suitable for its original function, Rabbi Yochanan says that its tum is gone. Now here's a strange contradiction. On the one hand, we have Rabbi Yochanan's statement that a bell could be used not only for music, but if it could be used as a cup, it retains its tumma status, even though the original function is completely gone. Here, in this context, in his machlokas against Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yochanan maintains that the tumma, even in the chumrah dikra case of tumas mes, and how much more so in other tumas like midras, in the case of a zav, that tumma can be completely undermined and neutralized if the object is no longer used for its original function. How do we reconcile that with Rabbi Yochanan's statement that a bell, as long as you could use it to make music by knocking it on the outside of a pot, it retains its tumah status? So in this contradiction between two quotes of Rabbi Yochanan, two statements of Rabbi Yochanan, one is going to have to give to the other. And that's called epoch. Epoch means when we have a transmission in which Rabbi X holds whatever he holds and Rabbi Y holds whatever. Epoch means we'll change around the names of the rabbis. And we'll attribute a certain statement to the other rabbi. It's going to be the same identica machlokas, just we change the opinions. So the Gemara says, epoch kamaisa. We're going to take the original ruling of Rabbi Yochanan, that a bell is still in the parasha of tumas mes, or any tumah, even when its clapper is removed because it could be struck on an earthenware pot. And we're going to say, no. That was not Rabbi Yochanan's statement. We'll attribute that to someone else, maybe to Rabbi Yossi. Let's go back to Rabbi Yossi. On the top of the page, Rabbi Yossi said, "Hol v'roy lahakish al gabi cheres." Okay, that's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. I'm sorry, my mistake. What I mean to say is, Rabbi Yossi, who said, "Hol v'roy lahakish al gabi cheres," that's really Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan would say, "Hol v'roy lahakish al gabi cheres." The second statement that we originally attributed to Rabbi Yochanan, "Hol v'roy lagameh bo mayim l'tinok." That wasn't Rabbi Yochanan. No. That's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said, Ho'il v'roi la'kisho agabi cheres, which means it's mei malachta rishona. It is an extension and a category similar to the original designation. Now, my friends, whenever you have a contradiction between two brisos and you apply the principle of epoch, you're always going to see the words umai chazis. Mai chazis means that who tells you to switch around this statement of Rabbi Yochanan? Maybe we'll switch around the other statement of Rabbi Yochanan. My chazis de apches kamaisa. What pushes you to the position that we should change around the original statement with regard to using a bell as a cup? Epoch, why not suggest bas raisa? Maybe in the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar, we should switch around the shitos, and we'll come to the conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan himself doesn't require that you have a me'ein malachta rishona. And maybe Rabbi Yochanan would maintain the position that if you switched over a barrel and now you've designated for sitting purposes, then it's considered that it's makabel tuma. Just like in the case of the bell that's used now as a cup. So Gemara says we don't have the luxury of changing the second statement of Rabbi Yochanan. B'yohash aminat lei Rabbi Yochanan, we have an explicit statement of Rabbi Yochanan. D'boi me'ein malachta rishona. That the fact that you could take this bell without its clapper and use it as a cup is not enough to retain its status as a kli for Kabbalah's tumah. And Rabbi Yochanan requires that the function of the bell would have to be me'ein Malachta Rishon is similar to the original designation, which means I can use it to produce music, as we discussed. And therefore, I can only apply the principle of Epoch Kamaisa, but not Epoch Basraisa. Epoch Basraisa is supported by an explicit statement of Rabbi Yochanan. In what context did Rabbi Yochanan make this requirement that the Tumah status depends upon the original designation? Desanya, we learned in a braisa. Sandal shel behema. They used to put occasionally shoes on an animal. And the braisa says that shel mateches, if this is made of a metal substance, so the animal is protected from the ground, it walks on stones, etc., etc., by virtue of this cup-shaped shoe. And I emphasize that it's got to be cup-shaped for our purposes, our discussion. Is tame. It's mekabel tuma. Now, they used to sometimes use a different substance to make this round shoe for the animal on its hoofs, and that is wood. You remember, I don't know to this day, but when I was a kid, they used to talk about in Holland, they wore wooden shoes. You remember that? Maybe you have some...
cloaks.
cloaks, and maybe you have some in your old collection somewhere, you know. Anyway, so they used to make that thing for animals. But the Gemara says that although it was round, it was basically flat, those wooden shoes. And that has to do with something called pshute kliyets. Now, pshute kliyets are not makabel tumah. So here we're talking about metal. And the question is, does it have the status of a kli? And lo and behold, to our surprise, the Braisa maintains that this sandal shel behema has the status of a kli. And the question is, why? We said over and over again that there's no such thing as a malbush or a tachshit of an animal. So it must be that a human being could gain and benefit something from this sandal. And now we have three opinions. L'maychazi, what are you going to gain? How are you going to use this shoe? Omar Rav. So the first two out of the three explanations, actually all three I should say, all three explanations are going to tell us that there is a what we call a shas milchama, shas hadchak, you know, some very difficult situations, scenarios that we find ourselves in, and we may be desperate out there during wartime. You know, we can't get access to everything that we get during peacetime. So Rav says, Roy lishtos bo mayim bimilchama. You know, if you're really desperate during the war, and you have to drink from a cup, you have no access to a cup, then since this shoe that was manufactured for an animal, but we had in mind that if need be, when we manufacture it, we could possibly use it as a cup, and therefore, it has a status as a kli. It can be used. Even b'shas shalom. Rav Chanina Omar, Roy losach bo shemen b'milchama. They used to use oil for all sorts of medicinal purposes, and in order to transfer or to carry oil from one place to the other, so it would be available during a wartime, if necessary, they would even use this kind of a shoe that was made for an animal. That's according to Rabbi Chanina. Rav doesn't buy in for oil. He feels that oil is not something that they had in mind when they created this shoe, that maybe they'll need it for oil. During wartime, there was no possibility of finding oil. They didn't use oil, or at least it wasn't regular. So that's not a normal kli. And then we have Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, B'shasha barech min ha-krav me'nicho baragla v'rotz al kotzim v'al barkonim, when he's running away from the battlefield, then he will need those very metal, strong shoes from an animal in order to protect his feet from thorns and thistles. But we see clearly that Rabbi Yochanan says that the reason why this sandal shel behem is tame is because I can use it as a shoe. He's not happy with using it as some sort of receptacle, because that's not me'ain malachta rishona. Rabbi Yochanan insists that the susceptibility to tumah depends upon the fact that the original purpose for which it was designated is still relevant. I can still use it for a human shoe if I'm really desperate. So therefore, we go back to the original question about a bell, and we wanted to suggest that according to one version in Rabbi Yochanan, a bell could be used as a cup, and therefore it maintains its status as far as tumah is concerned. That cannot be so. We have an explicit statement here of Rabbi Yochanan, which is similar to his statement with regard to a barrel, that you can't make it as a seat. And what you require is me'ain malachta rishonus. In the case of a bell, if it loses its knocker inside, its clapper, then you can use it to make music. And in the case of a shoe that covers the metal shoe that covers the foot of an animal, we can use it for a shoe during wartime. And that, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is me'ain malachta rishona. And that's the way we're going to understand Rabbi Yochanan. Now the Gemara goes into detail about these three answers that we just gave to explain why a sandal shel behema is tameh. My ben Rav le Rabbi Chanina is a samnaf gemina between Rav and Rabbi Chanina Rav said that you could use it as a cup to drink from, and Rav Chanina said you use it as a receptacle for oil to anoint. What happens if the shoe has become soiled and it's repulsive? This reminds us of sugyas that we learned in Muktzah, if you remember, about a Ner Yashan that was Mos and Muktzah, according to one opinion. Here also it's Mos. And therefore, you wouldn't drink from it. If you're putting oil into it just to contain the oil, as we say in Yiddish, Nishkefelach, that's not horrible. And therefore, according to Rav, this would not be a shoe that would have a status of Kabbalah's Tumah, because it's not even roy for a function as a cup. I'm assuming now the Mo situation is something permanent. It's not just that you, you know, just rinse off, you know, the clean off the top of the shoe. It's really filthy. But if you're going like Rav Chanina, okay, we can still use it if necessary as a receptacle for oil. Now the Gemara wants to know what's the nafkamina between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina. Bein Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina, Ika beinayu di yakir. Sometimes the animal needs a very, very heavy shoe, which a human being could not possibly wear. If he's fleeing from the battlefield, he's got to go at the speed of light. And who's that comic character? Flash Gordon, whatever his name was. Right? So he's got to run like a flash. And if the shoe is too heavy, he can't do it. But as far as Rav Chanina is concerned, it still is in a kli for Kabbalah's Tumah, because it could be used to contain oil. And that concludes the sugya that we started yesterday. Now we start a new sugya. We go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah is... Yakir means heavy. It weighs too much. You know, it's going to weigh him down. Yeah. Could you imagine if you put on your foot a metal shoe, very heavy, and you have to run like the speed of light because the adversaries are on your tail in hot pursuit? That's not going to be a functional shoe for that particular scenario. So in war, you have to make sure that the shoe is not too heavy.
Thank you.
Now the Mishnah speaks about something called Ir Shel Zahav, a city of gold. And the Mishnah is talking about various tachshitim, various ornaments that are worn by a woman. And we don't allow it to wear them in Rishus HaRabim if we fear that she might take them off to show them off to her friend, and she might inadvertently carry them in Rishus HaRabim. My ear shall be ear shall zav. What does this mean? Rabba Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, Yushalayim did the Hava. They took an ornament, it was very expensive, and they came up with a beautiful likeness of Yushalayim. In Judaica art, you'll see a lot of these. Not so much pins, more in tzirim, but in any event, Kida Avidle Rabbi Akiva Lidbeise. We're now on the top of Daf Nun Tesam and Beis. And our Gemara is Mashlim. It completes what we have in Masechta Nedarim. Rabbi Akiva was very strongly rejected by Kalva Basavua, his father-in-law, because at that time Rabbi Akiva, even at the age of 40, was a total ignoramus. And Kalva Basavua did not want to marry off his great daughter to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva married her, Rachel, and they had a lovely marriage. And Rabbi Akiva, they went through very hard times. They had no support. And Rabbi Akiva started learning Torah, as you know, which he dedicated the rest of his life to Torah. And he promised his wife, if we'll get to good times, I will create for you a beautiful ornament. I will commission an artist to create Yushalayim Shel Zahav. And the Gemara Nedarim never finishes the story. Did Rabbi Akiva ever get a chance to create this ornament? We only know it from this Gemara here. The Gemara's language is Kida Ovid Le Rabbi Akiva Lidbesu. That Rabbi Akiva came through with his promise and he gave her a golden ornament engraved in the likeness of Yushalayim. And that's the gift that he gave. Tosis here has a long discussion about the problem of Zecher l'Churban. We mentioned in the past that after the destruction, there were certain beautiful ornaments, like ateres kalos, means crowns for the brides, that were prohibited. And here's a very beautiful crown that was made out of gold. Wouldn't this violate that prohibition? And there are two answers to this question. One answer is that our Mishnah is talking about Shabbos. As far as crowns for brides, that would not be a problem for other women. That's only for a bride. And Rashi gives an answer that we're talking about not a crown that's worn on the head, but rather a pin that's attached to the clothing. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brayso, lo teitze isha be'ir shel zahav. A woman on Shabbos should not go out wearing this pin, the city of gold. And now the brayso quotes three different opinions. What happens if she did so? The first opinion, that a Rabbi Meir im yotza chayeves chatos. This is a violation of the Malacha d'oraisa of Hotza. In other words, since you're not allowed to wear this on Shabbos, Rabbi Meir goes a step further and he says that this is called Hotza. This is actual carrying. And this sheet of Rabbi Meir requires a lot of study, a lot of analysis, because Hotza is something that you carry in your hands, or perhaps a masa that you carry on your back, a burden. This is an ornament. And although she's not allowed to wear it in Rosh Hashanah, she might forget, take it off, show it to a friend, and carry it, but that means she'll carry it in her hands. That's not what Rabbi Meir is talking about. So we have to understand Rabbi Meir. Chachamim omrim lo teitze. She's not allowed to go out with such an ornament on Shabbos. She might come to take it off and carry it, but im yotza petura. But she's not in violation of Meleches Hotza. She's not carrying it. She's wearing it as a tachshit. Okay, there's an Issa d'Rabbanan that she violated, but don't tell me that she's chayav achatos. And now we have the third opinion, the most extreme view, Lekula, and that's Rabbi Eliezer. And he says, Yotza Isha Be'ir Shal Zahav L'chatchila. According to Rabbi Eliezer, this tachshit is so expensive and so rare that only an Isha Chashuva, as we'll see, only a very, very special woman would have such a tachshit. And this kind of woman is not interested in showing it off to others. That's below her dignity. B'maykom miflugi, Rabbi Meir sover masoyhu. Rabbi Meir holds that even when you attach this pin, the city of gold, as an ornament, as a tachshit, it's still called a masa. It's called carrying a burden. Even though she's wearing it. That's called carrying. Rabbi Meir apparently, as we said before, has a very revolutionary and very all-inclusive definition of Meleches Hotza. And he thinks that even something that's worn as an ornament is considered masa. It's considered carrying. So I have here a footnote in the name of the Tosa Rush. I don't have access to the Tosa Rush right now. And he says that what the Gemara has in mind by masa here is that Rabbi Meir holds that the ir shel zahav is not a tachshit. Why isn't it a tachshit? I mean, it's a classic ornament, is it not, for adorning a woman? He says, Pilei Ploim, this is the Tosa Rush. I mean, this could really change the whole understanding of this perek. He says that if there are other purposes for which this was worn, Like, take for example, remember we spoke about an emblem that was worn by an Eved. So that's not called a Kli, that's not called a Beged, that's worn for another purpose. And Rabbi Meir holds, if it has another purpose, and it's not a Tachshit, and it certainly doesn't warm your body, then that's called Masa. And that's a violation of Hotzah D'Oraisa. Why isn't it? Why, just let me, one last sentence, I'm sorry. And why isn't a city of gold, why isn't that not considered an ornament? Says the Tosa Rush, that the reason she wore it was to, it's like an emblem, that she belongs to the higher class of society. This was a way, and you've seen this throughout history, you know, if you watch the old, you know, the movies of the old rich in Britain and other countries, you'll see that the rich women had certain different kinds of things that they wore that were just a badge, so to speak, in which they advertised the fact, I belong to a certain class. I mean, I belong to a higher class. And Tosa Rosh says that does not have the status of a tachshit. And therefore, Rabbi Meir holds its masa. Yeah, Michael?
So just the article also says that it was very heavy, and maybe that's why it was a masa. Because it actually weighed her down.
Mm. I thought what he meant to say was that since it's heavy and it weighed her down, there must have been some other motivation for her to wear it. She had plenty of other...
Yeah, it says that as well.
Yeah. Okay, now we get to... We get to the Chachamim. Rabbanan Savri Tachshid Hu. Rabbanan say that no matter why she wears it, you know, to show and put a badge on, I'm a wealthy woman, I belong to that echelon of society, at the end of the day, it's an ornament and adorns her. And therefore, there's no masa here. But Dilma, but we're afraid, Sholfo Machvele, she might remove it to show it to a friend. Now, I'm not sure why she's removing it to show it to a friend. Is she trying to boast about what she got? Or perhaps her friend is very curious to hold it, to see it. It's like, I remember I used to buy antiques for him. And when I went to an auction, I couldn't afford the Ramah's copy of the Mor Nevuchim with the Ramah's own Ksav Yad, which sold for more than $250,000. But I asked the seller, can I just hold on to it? I remember my friend, Rabbi Moshe Chwersky, Zichor Levracha, he was killed 5 minutes from here by the Arabs. So he was holding on, where Rav Soloveitchik brought in Rav Chaim's writings, his own Ksav Yad. And after the Shia, he had to go to the washroom. He asked his grandson, Rabbi Chwersky, to hold on to it. So I say, Moshe, can I hold on to it for a second? He said, I don't think my grandfather would allow that. So maybe this woman says to her, oh, wow, that's an unbelievably rare piece. So Yushalayim Shel Zahav, can I just hold it for a minute? And the Asya Lasuye, once it's taken off in a public area, she might come to carry it. And that's the Sheet of the Chachamim. So basically, an ear shel zahav, according to Chacham, has the same status as all the other ornaments that we mentioned, like, for example, nose rings and beautiful studded frontlets that she wore on her head, and we're always afraid she'll take it off to show, and then she'll carry it inadvertently in Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Lezer Sovar, man darkel mefik be ear shel zahav. Who has this wonderful gift, a special ornament called the ear shel zahav? Isha Chashuva, only a very rare woman, belongs to a very special class. And Isha Chashuva lo meshalfa umachve. She's not interested in showing it off, or perhaps she's afraid to take it off. It might get stolen, it might fall, it might break. So this woman is very, very careful. She's not interested in taking it off. Now the Mishnah had mentioned other different types of ornaments, and the Gemara now addresses the issue of something called a klila. A klila is something that's worn on a woman's forehead. I have a couple of diagrams here in the Masifta. Rav Asar Shmuel Shari. Rav says we're afraid that she might take it off. It doesn't actually cover her hair, it's on her forehead, and it's beautiful, and she might take it off. And the question is, what is this made of, this klila? Is it made of a special metal, a precious metal? Is it made of cloth, of woven cloth? So Rav says it's asur. And presumably Rav would say it's asur, even in a case of something that's made of cloth. And the question is, why would she take this off? What is she going to show off? She has a band that she wears about her forehead. It's made of cloth. Big deal. Shmuel Sharit. So Gemara says the following. The insika kuliyama lo pligi the asur. There's such a band that she wore around her head that's made of gold or silver. Very fancy ornament. And everybody agrees that's asur because there's no question that we have to include it in those significant ornaments where we're afraid she might take it off to show a friend and carry it. Dalet Amos and Rishus HaRab. Ki pligi, what's the issue? The aruksa. It's made of woven cloth. Well, if it's made of woven cloth, you and I will ask, well, why is that a tachshit? And why do we have a fear that she would take it off? I mean, you could wear any sort of shmata, pardon the expression, around your head. Who's going to show it off? But the answer is, Rashi points out, that it is studded. In other words, there are precious stones that are added to this piece of cloth. Mar Sovar, according to Rav, let's classify this as an ornament, aniska ikar. In other words, those precious stones of gold and silver, or whatever precious stones they are, pearls, that's the ikar. Which means that once again, since she sees this as very significant, she'll be tempted to show it to a friend, and it's included in all the surim mentioned in our Mishnah. Marasov, according to Shmuel, aruksa ikar. The fabric is the ornament. We're going to define and classify it by the main structure, the ikar, which is the fabric that's made of cloth. And anything that's made of cloth, we're not afraid she'll take it off and show it. And again, Rabosi, in an Iyun Shia, we would have to spend a lot of time trying to analyze this Machlok Shin Rav and Shmuel. At the surface level, we could say that the Machlokus is more of a psychological Machlokus, but that's obviously being very superficial. Do we consider this a fancy ornament? That's Rav's opinion. She might show it off because of this precious stones. Or do we say she would never show it off because it's basically a cloth? It's fabric. And we don't have to be choshesh that she'll carry it for Amos, that's Shmuel. Yeah, I was wondering, in today's society, what would be the halachic status, again, in the absence of an Erev, I'm talking, of what they call, what's the word for it, with a Z? Is it zarkona? I forget exactly the word. It's a kind of diamond that's not worth much. You know, maybe it costs...
Zircon.
Say it again?
Zircon.
A zircon.
Zircon.
Whatever you pronounce it. You're getting the point. I don't care how you pronounce it. Zircon. And we're talking about substances that are, again, I don't want to say worthless, but you can buy it really, really cheap. They're absolutely stunning. Only an expert would know whether it's real or not. You know, would a woman take that off in the Rishus HaRab to show it off when it costs bupkis? You know, it's less than $100. You know what I'm saying? I wonder what the status of such a thing is. I feel in my bones that would be dependent on the machlokus between Rav and Shmuel, although Rav might be limited to a case where it's studded with real expensive precious stones or jewels. In my case, maybe she would not take it off to show it off. But I don't know, maybe she would take it off to show it to someone, either to fool her, or maybe just to show her how beautiful it might look, even though it only cost $100. I don't know. Anyway, Rav Ashi Masni Lakula. Rav Ashi had a different take on this machlokas shin Rav and Shmuel Lakula. And what is that? Daruksa de Kuliyama lo pligi de shari. Aruksa was this case that we thought was the machlokas shin Rav and Shmuel, because you have something that's made of fabric, but it's studded with precious stones. Everybody agrees that that's permissible. She's not going to take off that fabric to show it off. Ki pligi, the machlokas is the aniska. And what's the aniska? Aniska was hammered out, a metal plate. And Mar Sovar, according to Rav, we understand very well. Dilma shlofa, or shulfa, umachvia. She may take it out in the street, remove it from her forehead to show it to a friend. And the reason for that is because it's hammered out of expensive metal. V'yosel asuya, she might carry it. Umar Sovar Shmuel was mekil. Man darka lemepik bi klila. When you have this kind of a fabric, which most women would wear just a pure cloth, you know, around their forehead, keep some of the hair in place, or it's beautiful, but it's not expensive, someone who would take this cloth and put special expensive jewels inside of it, that's only an Isha Chashuva. V'Isha Chashuva lo Sholfa u'machvia. A woman who is distinguished, she's in the upper classes, she doesn't usually take something off, and therefore it has the status like similar to Rabbi Lozer, if you recall, in the case of an ear shell zahav.
So the more expensive jewelry, the more likely it is the woman is going to show it. Like you were saying, costume jewelry may very well be okay.
Right. I'm not posking, but you know, it would seem that the stuff that you pay basic bottom dollar for, I don't see why she would want to show that off. And then you go to the other extreme, when you have something that's unusually beautiful, and very few women could afford such a thing. You know, you talk about a cloth, it's basically like a shmata, and she pays a professional. You know, this is not something you buy, you know, maybe you could get it at an auction, but it's not something that you buy in your average store. You know, we have a store here outside of Harnof that sells all sorts of coverings for women's hair. None of them are worth anything. I mean, a shetel is worth money, but you wouldn't want to steal someone's shetel. Amalei Rav Shmuel bar Chana l'Rav Yosef Beferish Amrit Lon Mishmei d'Rav. We heard you, yeah, Rav Yosef had suffered from amnesia. So very often the Gemara tells us that they had to remind Rav Yosef what he had taught them. And you taught us, says Rav Shmuel, in the name of Rav, that Klila Shari, that she's allowed to wear this thing called a Klila. Now, Rav said that Klila was Asur, but if we take Rav Ashi's reinterpretation of Rav, then if we're talking about something that's pure gold, okay, that's Asur. But if we're talking about something that's made of fabric, and it's just studded with expensive, rare jewels, then Rav Ashi's interpretation was that everybody agrees that that's mutter, and even Rav would agree that mutter. So it seems that we have proof positive by reminding Rav Yosef of what he taught them in his youth, that Rav was of the opinion that when you have this studded cloth that she wore around her forehead, she's allowed to wear that in Rishus HaRab. Amru Leila Rav, Chazal, the Chachamim said to Rav, Osa Gavra Rabba Richa Linarda. A great man came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, and he was very tall. Umatle, and he was limping. Vidarash, and he taught us, based on his tradition from Eretz Yisrael, Klila Shari. And Rav accepted this, that Klila Shari, we're talking about something that's a cloth fabric that she wears around her forehead, and it's studded with expensive jewels, and it has the status of a fabric, and it's mutter. And who is this great sage that came from Eretz Yisrael, and he was very tall, and he limps? Omar Rav. So Rav says, Man gava rabba richa ditla, Levi. This is the great Levi. Levi, in his generation, was considered on par as a scholar with the greats. Specifically, we're going to talk about Rav Chanina. I'll tell you something about Rav Chanina. Rav Chanina, who was Levi's Chavrusa, was appointed by Rabbi Yudan Nasi to take over as Rosh Hashiva after Rebbe died. Rebbe actually left it in his last will and testament that Rav Chanina, that's Levi's Chavrusa, would take over as the Rosh Hashiva. It didn't happen. Why didn't it happen? Because there was an elder statesman who was years older than Rav Chanina. His name was Afes. We don't know too much about him, but we know that Rav Chanina, instead of taking over as Rosh Hashiva, which he felt would undermine or insult the sensitivity of Rav Afes, he allowed Rav Afes to take over as the Rosh Hashiva after Rebbe died. Now Levi, during this period of time that Rav Afes was serving as the Rosh Hashiva, Rav Chanina was not in that official capacity. Rav Chanina used to learn outside the yeshiva. He didn't want to compete with Rav Afes. And Levi found a great chevrusa with Rabbi Chanina. Now, why is Levi showing up in Arda? So Rav scratches his head and he says, Shma Mina, I can learn from this, if Levi is here from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Noch Nafshi de Rav Afes. It must be the Rav Afes died. And what happened after the death of Rav Afes? The Yosef Rav Chanina Bereisha. And Rav Chanina now took over as the Rosh Hashiva. Levi could no longer learn together with Rav Chanina because Rav Chanina was too busy with his teaching functions. And therefore Levi came here to Nardoi and he wants to find a good chavrusa. So the Gemara asks, how did Rav draw this conclusion? V'dilma perhaps, noch nafshi de Rabbi Chanina. Maybe it was Rav Chanina who died. And Levi lost his chavrusa, so he came here to Narda to seek out another Rebbe or another chavrusa. Rav Afes is still alive and well. With the death of Rav Chanina, Levi could not find a replacement chavrusa. Kasilach, he came here. Who says that Rav Afes died? Maybe it was Rav Chanina who died. Nein. Says the Gemara, Rav knew that that wasn't possible. Im Isa de Rabbi Chanina Shachiv. If Rabbi Chanina would have died, then Levi would not have packed out of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because Levi le Rabbi Afes mechev havi chafifle. Levi deferred out of respect to Rav Afes, and He would not have, in a sense, insulted Rav Afes by leaving Eretz Yisrael, as if to say, well, you know, Rav Chanina died, I'm going to pack out, Levi would say. There's no one here left in Eretz Yisrael for me to learn from. That would be insulting to Rav Afes. So the only way that it's possible that Levi would have left Bavel would be if Rav Afes was gone. So the Gemara says, Visu, I have another reason why Rav deduced the fact that Rav Chanina was still alive. And that is the Rav Chanina lo sagi lo molch. There must be a time period in which Rav Chanina would be the Rosh Hashiva. It's impossible that Rav Chanina died without being elected as the Rosh Hashiva. It must be that Rav Afes died and Rav Chanina replaced him. How does Rav know that? They didn't have, you know, social media. How did he know? So the Gemara says, the Chiavika Nicha Nafshe de Rebbe, when Rebbe passed away, Omar, he declared, Chanina Rebbe Chama Yosef Barash. Chanina will be the Rosh Hashiva. Uksivu Tzadikim, anything that a Tzadik says, Vatigzar Omer Vayokam Loch, and you will make a plan and it will succeed for you. Posganiyov. Whatever a Tzadik says, the Tzadik goes there. If Rebbe announced that Rebbe Chanina would take over for him after his death, then at some point in time, Rebbe Chanina would certainly head up the yeshiva. And the reason why Levi came to Narda is because, in fact, Rav Ofes died. It would not be insulting to Rav Ofes to leave. Rebbe Chanina replaced him to fulfill the gzeira of the tzaddik of Rebbe. And now, Levi is Jerusalem. He doesn't have Rabbi Chanina. He has no problem packing out of Bavel. Rabbi Chanina is busy with his official responsibilities as the Rosh Hashiva. And now I'm stuck, says Levi. I better go to Narda. There I'll find the Chavrusa. Dorish Levi ben Narda, Klila Shari. And we said that Levi came into Narda. And he publicized this halacha. He was so excited that he had the special merit to bring this halacha from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Now, all of a sudden, the women come out of nowhere wearing these klilas, these forehead bands on Shabbos. Nafik esrim v'arba klile mikula narda. How many women in the entire city of Narda owned klilas? You know, this special kind of a cloth band that was studded with jewels. 24 from the entire city of Narda. That's not a lot. Darish Rabba Bar Avua b'Mechoza. Mechoza was the largest city. Klila Shari. Once he heard from Levi that they allowed it in Narda, because Levi brought this transmission of Eretz Yisrael, he now announced it in the city, the great metropolis of Mechoza. V'nafku tamnei sarei klilei michad mavoa. From every single alleyway, 18 women wearing these kinds of things on their fire, these klilas, came out. And that's because this was a wealthy town. Women were able to afford this, and they came out in the masses. There were probably more women in one mavui in Mechoza than all the women. I mean, it's almost the same amount. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Shmuel, Kamra Shari. Now, this is very interesting. You wear a belt, and you have like a buckle, and the buckle is made of some expensive jewel or stone. And it's mutter. Why? Because even though usually we don't talk about takshitim and jewels for men, but in this case, it's functioning as a belt. You know, like people who attach their keys, you know, for the belt where there's no eruv. Now, there are two interpretations here. Some say that if it's an ornament, then we have to ask the question, maybe he'll show it to somebody else. And there are two answers to that question. Men don't show off ornaments. The other is that it functions as a beged because it's attached to his belt. If it's an ornament, why doesn't he take it off to show it? So the Mefarshim say, and they base themselves on Rashi, that if he takes off his belt to show it, his pants will fall down. Ike d'amrei. Others say Daruksa, that this statement of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel was talking about a fabric, as we said before. It may have studded gold in it. Omar of Safra, Midi Davi Atalis Musheves. Right, they had a talis or any sort of a garment, and they would decorate it with gold, and you're allowed to wear it because it's part of the beged. Iki Diamri Daniska, some say it was hammered gold. The Omer of Safra, Midi Dehavia Avnet Shel Molochim. Just like there's golden belts of kings that can be worn, so to every Jew is considered like a king, and he's allowed to wear a belt that's hammered gold. and it's regular and it's accepted. Amalei Ravina Ravashi Kamra Ilove Hamnoya Mai. What if you put an ornate belt on top of a belt? Can we consider it as a tachshit if it's on top of your regular belt? Amalei, so Ravashi responded, Trei Hamnoye Kamrit. You're talking about wearing two belts? You can't wear two belts. One belt will keep up your pants, and therefore it's considered a malbush. It's considered a piece of clothing, but a second belt is not. And this would support that opinion that men don't have tachshitim on their belts. So if he's wearing the second belt just for the purpose of a tachshit, that's not something that men do. Omer Ravashi. Ravashi says, Hai rasuka islei mafchios mafri chaisa shari. He's talking about a tie, some sort of a band that was attached to his belt, and he says you're allowed to wear it. Vilo asir. But if it's not tied permanently, then it's prohibited. So this is where we're going to stop. Let's make a note. We are up to the bottom of Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. Vilo bi katla. Katla, we said, was a choker that goes around the neck. And the Gemara is going to ask what exactly a katala is. And the Gemara says it's a menakta fari. It's some sort of a bib that the fancy women used to wear to catch the crumbs that they would fall. And it was made out of some very expensive, beautiful material. And we're afraid again that she might take it off and show it to her friends. And that'll lead us to the question of rings, nose rings, and earrings, which Amir Tzashem, Tzvi Neder, will pick up tomorrow. So I'll thank everyone for joining me and wish everyone a great day.
Can I ask you a general question?
Sure.
On the whole subject of the chashash that the woman that carried is in Rishus HaRabim.
Right.
So when you're walking along with somebody and you want to show them something, what you do is just stop. Because if you're going to try and take something off and show it to them while you're walking along, so you're almost certainly going to stop. So we actually have a two-stage process here. Number one, she's got to take it off.
Right.
Then she shows it to a friend. And then, for some reason, she would start walking again before she put it on again. I mean, that's like a two... And the
rabbis
were still afraid that she was
going to
do that.
You mean it's like Xera. I think what it is that the Rabbanon wanted to set it up in such a way that people would not take things off in Rishus HaRab. That was the Xera. And then they asked themselves, well, what kind of a ornate object should we be afraid of that she'll take it off in Rishus HaRab? The rest already is something else. Then, you know, once you're taking off something in Rishus HaRabim,